Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the economic shit show that is the global economy, led by our fearless ringleader, Jerome Powell, who, although trying for a long time today, was unable to locate his testicles. My guess is that they are in a mason jar somewhere secure on Donald Trump's presidential desk, guarded by the Secret Service. Because if he finds those, then the stock market might go down, and then old Donnie Trump may have a bit of a problem on his hands. This is the QTR Podcast. Couple of quick things before we get started. Number one, this podcast is brought to you by my patrons. Patrons are people that sign up through Patreon. They donate a recurring monthly sum to help support the podcast. They're the capitalistic engine behind the podcast. I know you hate hearing this shit at the beginning of the podcast. I know you hate seeing the link every time I put it up. But look, I'm not forcing you. There's no forcing. I'm just saying. It's like when I log on to Wikipedia, right? The other day I was trying to find out what the Waffle House Index is. If you don't know what it is, go look it up on Wikipedia. But basically, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, actually has a way of determining the effects of storms by gauging how Waffle Houses in the area operate. Now, you could be saying to me, Chris, you're full of shit. Go ahead, fucking look it up. When you do look it up, you might get that stupid banner across the top of Wikipedia that says, for only for a cup of coffee, you can be rich and rich, blah, 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 blah. Buy your own fucking server space. Stop asking me for money. That's how I feel when I'm on Wikipedia. I love what you guys are doing, but I think I donated a dollar or two once and that's it. I don't want to be a freeloader. The point is, I'm trying to sympathize with you. If you're not a patron, I understand you don't want to fork it over. So just enjoy and free ride and freeload. And if you feel good about it, and you're all right with it, then I'm all right with it. But there are some people that have reached out and do support this podcast, and I want to shout them out immediately. Number one, my friends over at Quantamize.com, Quantamize, Quantamize is an AI-powered platform with over 10,000 stocks, options, and cryptos, was recently rated the second best platform or the best alternative to a Bloomberg terminal by Benzinga. There is a free trial link in the podcast description. You can check them out. I also want to shout out my brother Jake over at the Behind the Bid podcast. It's an 8 to 10 minute podcast every morning. They review between 8 to 10 equities. There's no bullshit. They spend 1 minute each on each equity. You can check that out, make it part of your morning routine, and feel good about supporting QTR at the same time. So I want to shout him out. I also want to shout out the people like Corvus Gold, Nathan Michaud over at investorsunderground.com, Chris Bede, Ken R., Chris Boas, my brother Russ Valenti, my friend Piggly Wiggly, fine purveyor of rare yam trees. Rare yam trees. Said it wrong the first time, got it right the second time. Happens sometimes, not when I'm drunk, but when I'm sober. Nathan Weiss, Andre Gagnon, and Matt Merle, I want to say what's up to. Got a couple of new patrons since yesterday, so I want to shout them out real quick too, and also shout out some of my most recent patrons, and I swear I'll get you out of here in under 4 minutes. We'll get on with the show. This shout out goes to Vic, who just signed up. My brother Glenn Tung just signed up. Shannon Russell's in the house. Bobby USA's in the house. Bluey Parker, Coyote Blog, Taylor Duran, Mark, Jesse Stroik, Steven Binder, and then some older school patrons. People like Adrian Carruthers, people like John Ryan Keel, Chris Ward is in the house. Justine Bone is still here. Mick Dosti is still here. Eric Penner is still here. You guys are fucking awesome. Tom Wysocki, what's up, brother? I still see you. All right, on to the rest of the rules. Number two, this podcast requires a two-drink minimum. After today's Fed Minutes, if you want to make it three, or if you've already had six, I understand. So just go for it. Knock yourself out. Today's the day. If you were waiting to pull out the ice luge and the Jägermeister like we used to do it in college, you want to go out and order a big block of ice, or maybe you're listening to the QTR podcast in Alaska or Buffalo or Saskatchewan already, go get some ice from outside, make yourself a homemade ice luge, and bong half that bottle of Jägermeister, because we're going there today, folks. Finally, in case you can't tell by me encouraging you to drink, by the way, only if you're of legal age, wink, I'm winking, you can't see I'm winking. I just realized when I'm winking, you can't see it. So I just did a wink, and that's why I said wink, and now I feel like I gotta explain it. Really got off track here for a second, folks. The point of the matter is, I am not a financial advisor. I am not an investment advisor. I'm not a life coach. I'm not Tony Robbins. Okay, I'm not Warren Buffett. I'm not Jeremy Siegel. You want boring, mundane, horse shit advice? Turn the TV on, put on one of the financial news media stations, and watch a guy like Charles Payne try to talk you through the intricacies of the stock market, all right? See if you can do that and try not to lose your lunch. So what happened today, folks? I got two things I want to talk about. The first is I saw the Theranos documentary last night, so I wanted to comment on that. And the second thing is Jerome Powell came out today and decided that everything is fine. And by everything being fine, he means that he's going to hold off on rate hikes. And why is he going to hold off on rate hikes? Because the economy is strong. And why is the economy strong? Well, because growth is slowing. Does it make sense to you, folks? Doesn't make fucking sense to me. Jerome Powell came out today and said, it's March 20th, by the way, all right? We're not even done with the first quarter of the year. And the FOMC has determined there will be no more rate hikes for the rest of the year this year. So they're already pulling forward the benefit of really being cowards and saying, all right, we're not going to put a rate hike on the table for the rest of the year this year. They're pulling forward the benefit of that now to the first quarter, which means that the market is supposed to digest that now. Ostensibly, this is what I think it means to them. The market is supposed to digest the benefit of that now, and people are supposed to be reassured that rates are not going to go up this year. But what happened today when he did that? Well, the market rallied instantly because he came out with a very dovish statement. But then after that, the market started to fall. So pulling all of the benefit up front for the whole year, you've come out and said that you're not going to lower rates. I'm sorry, you're not going to raise rates for the rest of the year. So that is a 9-month commitment or 8-month commitment from this point. You're basically giving 8 months worth of guidance there that the market is supposed to price in. And you have, as the Fed is great at doing, removed another item from your toolbox for the rest of the year, which is if you come out again and you say, all right, well, we're going to raise rates at some point this year because things are getting better or because the economy is getting better, you're going to look again like an indecisive mess that has no clue what you're doing. Or as the FOMC calls it, a regular Wednesday at the office. The point of the matter is you're supposed to, I'm assuming what the Fed wants is they wanted to pull forward the 8 months of that assumption that there would be no rate hikes to the market today. Now, I don't know why it's necessary to come out and use this language, even if you're taking it from the position of the Fed is basically playing to appease the markets. Well, what happened? I mean, the Christmas Eve panic is over, right? The market dropped significantly to start the year after numbnuts Steve Mnuchin had to come out on Christmas Eve and say, hey, I know nobody asked, but by the way, the banks have ample liquidity. Well, everybody's looking around like, is this guy fucking serious? After he does that, the markets crash as a result of that. So golf clap for that job by him. He's like Ralph Wiggum on The Simpsons. I'm helping, you know? It's like, no, you're not. But anyways, that shit show was documented on a podcast that I did, I think, on Christmas Eve of last year. And the market sank as a result of that. In the succeeding days, that you know, the market dropped 15% or 20% or whatever it was. And of course, everybody flipped out. News anchors were flipping as shit. Everybody was panicking. It was incredible. I was enjoying myself personally. I mean, I happen to enjoy watching stuff like today when you're sitting on a long gold position. This is exactly what you want. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go ahead. Do QE4. Knock yourself the fuck out. Literally. Enjoy yourself. And then after that, do QE5. Yeah. And I got an idea after that. Do QE6. Shithead. I'm sitting back just like, this is incredible. It's like if you went to Jerome Powell in the morning and you said, could you work tirelessly and as diligently as possible to destroy the currency in this country, starting effective today, go. There's no better route than he could have taken than what he came out and said today. So as far as I'm concerned, if you're short the dollar or you're long gold to be short the dollar or short the whole system, as I often say, I like seeing this stuff. Anyways, the market rebounds after this decline at the beginning of the year this year. And it's come all the way back up. The S&P is all the way back up over 2,800 right now. So the market has pretty much come back to near record highs, near all-time highs, all-time as in like all-time in the existence of the whole fucking stock market. Not one-year highs, not five-year highs, not 10-year highs, not 50-year highs, not 100-year highs. Like, since you guys put the fucking economy into the Game Genie and put the Game Genie into the Super Nintendo and then turn the power on, we are right about at all-time highs, which would make a normal person be inclined to ask, what the fuck is everybody so worried about? What are we flipping out about? What's wrong with a little rate hike? What's wrong with a little recession, right? People say recession like it's the end of the world. We have taken normal free market economics, the basic laws of economics, and we have done to the basic laws of economics what El Guapo did to Santa Poco in The Three Amigos. And then he goes back to his headquarters and celebrates with his friends. Remember, he's like, together we raped the horses and rode off on the women. It's like that. We're just destroying the laws of economics. This obsession that we have with micromanaging every part of the economy, it's just like if you're a fisherman, right? And you catch a nice big fucking largemouth bass. The more you try to hold on to that thing once you get it in the boat, the more difficult it's going to be to actually hold on to. The harder you squeeze on that slippery-ass fish, the quicker it's going to shoot out of your hands and back into the water. And that's what's going on with the economy. The harder we try to hold on to certain parameters and metrics and variables and prevent things from happening, the worse it's going to be when it happens. So it used to just be, hey, well, maybe we can fuck with interest rates just a little bit just to make sure that the recession that we're having isn't so horrible. And then that became, well, maybe we should just lower rates and also print a little bit of money too. And let's see if that helps things out a little bit. You know, we can buy some bonds. We can stack some shit on the Fed's balance sheet. And by the way, you know, also cushion the blow for the market. And then it just became, well, we have to cushion the blow for the market, but we also want to make sure that the market is going up because that somehow gives the illusion of prosperity. Sure, if you're Warren Buffett or if you're Jeremy Siegel and all you're recommending is to go out and buy stocks, then that's a great idea. But if you're an average Joe that's been saving money under his mattress because he doesn't understand how to invest and he doesn't have an E-Trade account because he doesn't know how the goddamn stock market works, and he thinks he's doing the right thing by shoving money into his mattress, well, that guy's watching 2% of his money just go off into nowhere on a yearly basis for a reason that he doesn't understand because of a system that is trying to control all variables. And then going from there needs to be a soft landing and the market should go up to now there can be no recessions. There can be no recessions. That's how we're thinking about it now. We have been in a 10-year uptrend in the market, 11 years probably now at this point. And at the first sight of anything going the slightest bit wrong, we are flipping the fuck out. The regulators, the politicians, the FOMC, the financial news media, people are losing their shit, folks. Okay, and let me remind you, nothing bad has happened. Yes, we had a slight pullback in the equity markets after they tripled over the last 10 years. Sure, but that used to be normal. Now that tiny little tick, that slight little pullback, that aberration is being looked at as catastrophic. And what does that mean? That means when a real problem actually happens, or maybe even just a medium-sized problem, not a housing market crisis, but let's just say we have a little bit more of a credit bubble burst. You're going to be looking at news anchors on television that are going to be red in the face. These people are going to be trying to deliver you news about what the futures are doing in the morning, and they're going to be doing it while cringing like they're simultaneously getting a root canal or passing a kidney stone through their urinary tract that's the size of a grapefruit. Then that'll be the people in the financial media that survived, because you know on the first downtick, people will be leaving. And my prediction will be not just people getting fired. Some people will probably get fired as a result of a recession, as a result of normal layoffs. But I think some people will just leave because they can't take the heat of being somebody in the financial news media when shit just goes haywire. So last time we had a problem in the economy, or the problem in the markets is really the best way to say it. Jim Cramer went on television and threw a temper tantrum, okay, for the Federal Reserve to see, and was yelling and screaming and trying to get his way with them. And I think this time somebody might just blow a head gasket. I mean, we all saw David Faber the day that the market was down 1,000 points. I mean, he looked like he had explosive diarrhea and he needed to run off the desk. So it's possible that if we actually do get a little bit of a problem here at some point, we might just lose a couple members of the financial media, you know? And especially the people that are just living in these dream worlds. Like, I don't know if you saw Wilford Frost's latest interview with Carson Block about Tesla. I mean, that guy's on Mars, okay? So he'll be gone. Wilford Frost may not survive the next recession on television. He might. Prove me wrong, Wilf. Prove me wrong. Maybe it'll be Leisman. Probably will be. Leisman, quote-unquote, announces his retirement. Simultaneously, as the day that the Dow dropped 0.4%, Leisman said, "The stress of the job is killing me. I just can't fucking take it anymore." And that might be the end. The point is, the more we have tried to rig the system, folks, the worse it's going to get. And now we have conditioned everybody, and it's not just the investor. It's not just the kids over the last 10 years that have come out of school and expect the stock market to be nothing but going straight up. And trust me, those are going to be some of the rude awakenings that I look forward to over the next couple of decades, because all the people that have come out of school and all the younger kids, many of whom are good people and legitimately want to figure shit out, but all those people that have spent their time investing in ETFs and buying shit companies with shit balance sheets and shit net income that are burning cash and doing dilutive cash raises, but the stock keeps going up, and all those people that think that they're geniuses are going to have another thing coming at some point. And not to be cruel, but that is a comeuppance that I'm going to be excited to watch, because a lot of these people are the same people that give me lip service, whether it's on Twitter or on email. You know, hey, you can only be wrong so much. Hey, you're constantly wrong. Look, I'll tell you right now. Yeah, sure. If you're gauging things on a scale of 1 week, 1 day, 1 month, 1 hour, 1 year, every 5 years, every decade, maybe I'm going to be wrong. Perhaps for this last decade. I mean, I remember saying with the Dow at 15,000, this can't go on forever. So maybe I am wrong, and I'll admit that. But the point is, over a longer time frame, I don't know how long it's going to be, 20 years, 40 years, 60 years, 100 years. What is our plan? What's the plan? What's the plan as the dollar continues to lose purchasing power? And the global economy and all of these global currencies rest on the United States dollar as the reserve currency. What's our long-term plan? Knowing the position that we're in now, where we can't raise interest rates, we literally don't have a fucking choice. We won't be able to service the national debt if we continue to raise rates. What are we going to do? We're just going to continue with this low interest rate policy ad nauseum, ad infinitum, until we get to really a fucking immovable object? And by that I mean a situation that we can't print ourselves out of? Is that what we're gunning for? Because that's going to be the point where we have big problems. One of the things that I noticed today that I found very interesting was the fact that after Powell did his little song and dance on stage, the market turned lower. So immediately when the headlines crossed the wire that the Fed minutes were dovish, and the headlines crossed the wire that the Fed would not be raising rates again this year, and that they wanted to be patient, and all this other horse shit that they've said, when those crossed the wire, the Dow jumped immediately. The whole market came up, and high-quality names like Tesla rallied. So the initial reaction, as you would expect, from the market was positive. Because the market says, okay, well, we're going to stop grinding the economy a little bit slower like we were doing with raising rates. Every time rates go up, people have to spend more to service their debt, and that slows the economy and it decreases discretionary spending. So in that respect, it's good news. But then what happened was once Powell started to field questions, the market turned negative. Now, I don't know if today is the day that the market loses confidence in the Fed, but what I would like to say is that at some point, this is going to be a whole other problem. The funny fucking thing is nobody even thinks about the goddamn economy anymore. People just think about what the Fed is doing and how that's going to affect the stock market. People don't even think about the actual economy. The stock market used to be the product of what companies were earning. And then people would put a multiple on that. And then people would price stocks accordingly. And a company's earnings used to be related to how the economy was doing. If the economy was doing well, a company would earn more because there would be more productivity, more spending, everybody would be happy, more money to go around. And when an economy was doing poorly and people had to tighten their wallets and people had to delever and people had to sell assets and there was deflation, okay, then companies would do poorly. But now, it doesn't even matter. The economy is out, folks. The economy is so last decade, okay? People don't even think about the economy anymore. The only thing people think of when it comes to the markets is the Fed. And here's why that's important. It's important because at some point with the economy, you knew what you had, right? In a booming economy, stocks ostensibly would move higher. In a economy that was slowing down, stocks would start to move lower, and you would have cycles. We used to have cycles. Now what we have is the Fed prodding the economy like cattle, you know, with those cattle prods. Just every time it slows down, it just hits it in the ass again with one of those 40,000 volts of electricity. Zzz, moo. And then the economy keeps moving, right? You just stick the cattle prod up the economy's ass and you turn that thing on and it just keeps moving because it doesn't want the thing up its ass anymore, right? But at some point, the battery to that cattle prod is going to start wearing down. And that's where we're getting now. And one of the major things we have to look at is if the market is reliant on the Fed to determine what direction it's going instead of the underlying economy, what's going to happen when the market, or even scarier, when Main Street loses whatever confidence? I mean, certainly I don't have any confidence, and I'm sure you don't either. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to this podcast. But what's the market going to do when confidence in the Fed finally dries up? Then you have a problem, right? And maybe we saw a little bit of that today. I mean, Powell came out and was extremely dovish. The market rallied immediately, but then what happened? The market sold off and gold was bid. So what does that mean? Does it mean that people are maybe not buying the Fed's bullshit anymore? Fleckenstein always says the Fed's buying their own bullshit. That I believe. But when the populace stops believing the Fed's bullshit and investors stop believing the Fed's bullshit, and what happens when the banks stop believing in the Fed and people stop having confidence in the currency, then what's going to happen? You think it's not possible. I know, folks, everybody has told me it's not possible. The dollar's the reserve currency. The dollar is a sheet of paper, okay? I got sheets of paper on my desk right now. Look, that's my sewage bill. It's sitting right in front of me. All right, if I take that to hand that to somebody, that's not $20. That's my sewage bill. As a matter of fact, that's a bill. It's a liability, not an asset. Right? So you got paper. You got the Fed's paper, which is backed by the full faith and confidence of the United States government. Whoop-dee-shit. And people are going to say, well, actually, Chris, that's backed by extrapolating out the tax revenues or the floor. We got a $22 trillion hole in the motherfucking balance sheet, people. Do you understand that? How out of whack can you let the country's balance sheet get before people start to question how many stock issuings the United States can do? At what point does our credit worthiness just collapse around the globe? And I know you think it can't happen. Everybody thinks it can't happen, which I love, by the way. I love that. Tells me I'm onto something. People look at the Fed and they look at the government like they have been anointed powers, secret powers from the universe itself that they know what to do. You ever see that Carl Sagan photograph where it's just a tiny little blip from the furthest reaches of the Hubble Space Telescope and it's an arrow pointing to the Earth and it says, this is it. This is the compendium of all human thought as we've known it. Every great thing and every terrible thing that's ever happened, the course of the human race, dinosaurs, and the Earth as we know it, that's it, right here. This tiny little speck in the universe, all right? So when you zoom out a little bit and you start to realize, hey, maybe we don't actually have special powers. I mean, it's crazy when you live your everyday life and you get up in the morning, you go get your coffee, you say hello to the woman that makes your coffee. At my Wawa, her name's Cindy. She's a lovely woman. You go about your business, you go to work. You fill your car up with gas, you go work 9 to 5, you get your paycheck at the end of the week, you pay your bills, you kiss your wife, you kiss your kids, life's good, bada bang, bada boom, 65 to 70 years of that, and then you start to head downhill. Generally, that's how life in general works, okay? Let's just zoom out from that. Where are we? Well, we're on the planet Earth, all right? So the entire global economy as we know it exists on this one little spinning globe out in the middle of the universe, all right? And our globe, our planet is part of a solar system, which is part of a galaxy, which is part of a supercluster, which is a part of a much bigger picture somewhere that nobody can ever conceive of. And where did we come from and where are we going? Nobody knows. And what's smaller than a fucking quark and what's larger than the universe? We don't really know. And we think within that scale of everything that's going on, and I'm not trying to get philosophical here, but I'm just trying to make a point. We think within that scale that the human race as we know it, all the fucking human races, you have seen it today. You know, the good and the bad of what we have, right? What do we have? We've had some great political leaders. We've had some great humanitarians, right? And we've had some really bad fucked up shit too. And I'm not just talking about Mario Batali getting drunk and abusing waitresses at his restaurants. And I'm not just talking about Harvey Weinstein taking girls down stairs in his secret restaurant so he can jerk off in a ficus. And I'm not just talking about things like Ja Rule trying to run and organize his own music festival. Folks, there's a lot of reasons to doubt the human race as a whole, all right? What makes you think that the Fed and the government have monetary theory figured out? We don't even know where we're going or where we're coming from. But we've got the solution. We have the definite end-all, be-all, universal solution for how the global economy should run. Is that really what you're telling me? The fact that everybody buys into it makes me think, it's probably not right. But we got the best and the brightest on it, right? Theranos, $9 billion valuation. Did you watch the movie? If you haven't, watch it. It's on HBO and read John Carreyrou's book. You know, General Mattis, all these decorated investors and U.S. political figures and people of dignity and people of authority and people of pedigree. Oh, it's a very prestigious board of directors. Yeah, except nobody has any fucking clue what's going on. You know, but aside from that, a lot of prestige. The one guy's like, yeah, I invest. I have a very successful investor, this guy. Probably will have more money than I've ever had in my whole life. He said, yeah, we just invest in companies because we like the entrepreneur that's at the beginning of them. They show a lot of passion. It's like, well, did you ever decide to get a couple of scientists together and figure out whether or not it would reasonably be possible to do all of the tests that this company says that it's doing in this little fucking box of plastic? Did you do any due diligence at all? I mean, is this what it's like when you're rich, when you're just a billionaire? You're like, yeah, take $10 million. If the thing works, it works, and if it doesn't, it doesn't. Meanwhile, I'm here just hawking this podcast to you guys mercilessly, working up a sweat trying to get one person to donate $2.86 on my Patreon so I can buy a Wawa soft pretzel. But I guess when you're a millionaire or billionaire, you just say, yeah, fuck it. Yeah, take $10 million. So the Federal Reserve and the federal government are just a bigger macrocosm of Theranos' investors. They all think they know what they're doing. It's like the one guy, Balwani or whatever his name is, they said in the movie, they're like, he expected this to just be another one of his successful projects. I'm like, well, did the fucking guy ever go downstairs? Did he ever leave his desk at the office? Or was he too busy trying to hump the leg of the founder to go downstairs and actually crack one of these machines open? Jesus. Balwani is sleeping with the founder of the company, right, who is like 16 years his junior and is a relatively good-looking woman. You can say what you want about Holmes. She's probably a sociopath. By probably, I mean definitely. But she's a good-looking woman. I mean, this guy, you know, he's a little overweight. looked like, based on my opinion, he was using some type of hair in a can product to color his hair, based on what they were showing me of him on the movie last night when I was watching it. Point is, it didn't look like it was his natural hair color. All things being equal, if that guy is working at the gas station and is not worth $50 million or whatever he's worth, he's not dating Elizabeth Holmes. That's all I'm going to say about that. And then, of course, the social justice warriors will come out and will say, well, you don't know, people might date him. He may have a good heart. He could be a wonderful, fascinating individual. Yeah, all right. You take that guy to bed butt-ass naked. Let me know how it goes. I'm getting sidetracked here, folks. The point is, Balwani is sleeping with the founder of the company, all right? And then decides he wants to stay on and also just try to be a part of this company, despite the fact that it appeared everybody at the company knew the fucking thing didn't work. I mean, you want to talk about balls. This is like in Seinfeld, where George Costanza is sleeping with the woman, and he brings the TV underneath the fucking bed sheets so we can watch the Yankee game while he's making love to this woman. And then he reaches down and tries to go for the sandwich on the ground. He says, now the trifecta. And Balwani was trying to go for the exacta, right? He had the founder and then he wanted to make the money too. The point of this whole rant is that it is human nature to push it, right? What does Ray Dalio say in that video? Ray Dalio's got some video, like how the economy works 101. And he says it's human nature to want to push it. And that applies to all humans. Sonny Balwani and Elizabeth Holmes and the federal government and all their investors, they just wanted to push it. They thought they had the next big thing and they wanted to push it. And that's what's going on here with the Fed and with the government. We have an unprecedented project going on right now in monetary policy, in economic theory. We're living it, okay? We're living the case study right now that 20, 30, 50 years from now, we're going to look back on and say, wow, how did we not see we fucked this whole thing up? When Alex Gibney makes the movie of our economy and we're all looking back on it the way that we're looking back on Theranos now, we're going to be like, man, how did we not see that? But this is an unprecedented experiment that we are embarking on now. And we think that we're too smart, we're too good, and we've got the secret codes to figure it all out. We think we have the next big thing. We think that QE and printing money is the next big thing. And then this modern monetary theory just takes it in the nth degree to the absolute extreme. You have these politicians like Ocasio-Cortez who just says, well, if the money comes off of a printing press and we have power to run the printing press, can't we just print the money and then all of our problems are solved? Isn't that how it works? It's like, fucking no, that's not how it works. Everybody thinks that we have the next big thing until all of a sudden you wake up one morning and the goddamn machine doesn't work. You wake up or you walk into the Walgreens and they give you a traditional phlebotomy test instead of giving you a Theranos finger prick test. And then some red bells and some lights and whistles start to go off and you say, well, what's wrong here? So that bellwether in the event of the U.S. economy is going to be when the country, and I think by proxy then the globe, starts to lose confidence in the Federal Reserve. And it's a definite possibility. And by then it will be too late. Okay? Holmes is already on TV at that point telling the whole world that the thing can do 200 tests. Here's the menu. No investors. $9 billion, folks. They ran up a $9 billion valuation on this company. No investors, no board members, nobody of prominence, shaking hands with politicians, sitting next to Bill Clinton, on the cover of Fortune, on the cover of Forbes. Nobody asked, is it possible? No, they just assumed that it would work. And it's like right now with our economy. People are like, hey, we're going to lower interest rates again. Can we keep doing this forever? Is it possible? Folks, we're living the case study right now. And that's why these people that are trying to inject a little bit of reality into people's minds, similar to the way that they do with Theranos, right? Because as all this was happening, there were certainly skeptics out there. As all this was going down, there were certainly people asking a lot of questions. And that's when Holmes postured up. She went on TV and she said, first you... Hang on, I gotta do this with a straight face. She said,
She sent first people to hurt you. First people call you crazy, then people doubt you, then you change the world.
Right? And so the people that are posturing up now, saying that this isn't possible with the global economy, they're getting that same type of pushback, right, from the people in power and the people wearing suits and the people wearing bow ties. You guys are just a bunch of conspiracy theorists, doomsday sayers. I think Zero Hedge wrote in one of its pieces, I can't remember, but it says like something like conspiracy theory often months or weeks later or years later turns into conspiracy fact. And I'm not saying they hit 100% of everything on the head, and I'm not saying I'm going to hit 100% of everything on the head. But nobody fucking notices you're living the case study when it happens. Enron, nobody noticed they were living the case study when it happens. Now we look back on it and we tell kids that are coming out of school, Enron was one of the biggest frauds in history, kids. But as it was happening, nobody really knew what was going on. You want a fascinating look at something? Go back and find the Yahoo message board posts from people that were on the Enron message board as this was happening. Because there were whistleblowers. There were people questioning what was going on. And they were being written off. This was back on the Yahoo message boards. And I think a couple of PhD students made this their dissertation at one point. But those people were being ridiculed and being laughed off as, you know, conspiracy theorists or whatever. And then what happened? Well, the whole thing went tits up. Fucking game over. Insert another quarter. As you're living the case study, it's not clear how the long-term effects are going to play out. And unfortunately, that's fine, okay? That's fucking acceptable for people in the financial media. That's acceptable for the everyday investor. That's acceptable for economists. That's acceptable, to people that live and have been indoctrinated within the confines of the system that it exists today. And what I'm telling you, folks, is if you don't break out of it and you don't start asking some critical questions and you don't start looking at things from a different angle, you're never going to see it coming. Never. And I think, honestly, the United States and the way that we've been really babying the stock market and shaping our economic policy and our monetary policy around the stock market to begin with, I think we're already way too far along to go back and make any type of fundamental changes. I mean, maybe we could raise rates and really start to try and protect the value of the dollar from here. I mean, I'm not saying we should implement another gold standard because I think that would probably cripple the system right now. But maybe if we took the first of 15,000 steps that we would need to take to just create some semblance of credibility within our system, just say, hey, we're just going to turn the press off for a year or 2 years. Or, hey, you know what? I know it sucks, but we're going to try and get some of this shit off the balance sheet because that's what we said we were going to do. Or, hey, you know what? We're going to try and really pay down some of the national debt instead of continuing to run up debt. We could just do any or all of those things. And I guarantee you, folks, I guarantee you, we could do a couple of those things without any type of major profound difference in the everyday lives of people. Yes, your 401ks may go down a little bit, but you can keep contributing to them and you can keep buying as, you know, whatever market it is that you're in continues to decline, right? You're not going to, the roads aren't going to start crumbling, okay? It's not like gas is going to go to $20 a gallon. It's not like there's going to be major problems out there. If anything, inflation will slow a little bit, and that actually would give, believe it or not, consumers a little bit more power with their dollar. We could start to make some common sense reforms, just as Theranos was probably at a point, right? I don't know when, but maybe in 2014 or 2013 or 2016, where they should have realigned expectations. Remember at the Fyre Festival documentary, the one guy says, you know, hey, we're 3 months out or 2 months out. We should start to try and change expectations so people don't expect that they're going to get there and get Steven Starr cooking and instead get a fucking cheese sandwich with a couple pieces of wilted lettuce on the side. And when you don't realign expectations and you get there and they drop you off and there's nowhere to sleep and the mattresses are wet and the sandwiches look like shit, then people start to freak out and panic. So Theranos had a chance to realign expectations at some point, I'm sure, and say, hey, you know what? Listen, The Edison can't do 200, but we're working on getting this one test done. And we've been having a little bit of problems with getting the fucking nanotainers to go through the thing properly. And they're spilling blood on the inside. Whatever, we're going to need a little bit more R&D time. The thing is fucked, all right? There's my scientific term for you. Yes, the company valuation would have come down a little bit, probably significantly, but it wouldn't have ended the way that it did now, which is just a giant fucking fraud. Everybody knows it's a fraud and it's over. The one thing I thought was interesting from the Theranos thing was that these companies all do hit this inflection point where one lie turns into two, turns into five, turns into ten, and when they start, the lies are very little. But then as you start to go on and on and on and on and on, the lies have to get bigger and bigger and bigger to sustain things. And there's a couple companies now where personally I believe that we're watching that. I'm not going to mention any names, but I will say that I'm winking. That's my wink sound. So the Fed has this option, right? The Fed can come out and realign expectations if they want. But instead, it's just easier to keep forging down the path that is going to pay off in the short term. And that is why I strongly believe that Jerome Powell is probably focused on himself only now. If I had to guess, I would say that the only thing this guy is worried about is not being stuck holding the bag of shit when it all comes crumbling down. And that is a long-held theory that I've had about Fed chair people, that the game is pass the bag of shit to the next person. Like I said about Yellen, I thought she was able to nicely pass the bag of shit to Powell, right? Now Powell has the bag of shit. What's he going to do with it? I don't know. Do you want to fucking throw it down and step on it? No, probably not, right? So you just want to pass it to the next person. Maybe now he's just thinking about getting rid of the bag of shit. He's thinking, well, I'm 55 or I'm 60 or whatever. You know, I got a couple of good decades left ahead of me. Let's just not shake shit up right now. But the point is, we can only have so many Fed chair people that adopt that attitude before somebody gets stuck holding the bag of shit, folks. And then they find out it's not just a bag of shit. It is a bag of nuclear shit that is going to kill everybody that comes within a 1,000-mile radius of it, okay? It's like shit that they got from a Superfund site. Some guy walking his dog, the dog gets off the leash, it goes and shits on a toxic waste dump. Then the shit sits there for like 25 years. You know, like this happens in the cartoons. And then the radiation seeps into it and it becomes shit with superpowers. Like the secret world of Alex Mack. You know? She snuck into the chemical factory and then all of a sudden she had the ability to fly and move things with her mind. That's the kind of shit he's holding. So how long he plans on going about this, I don't know. But the point is that people like me are not trying to be, you know, these permanent bear conspiracy theorist doomsday sayers. The only thing we're trying to do is realign expectations of the individual investor. If CNBC is not going to come out and tell you, hey, by the way, we always have a long bias for the most part. And by the way, we are reporting things as they exist under the indoctrination of this system that we've been on over the last 30 or 40 years, which is really an unprecedented experiment in and of itself. If they're not going to come out and say that, then I'm going to say it. All I'm trying to do is realign some expectations and kind of get people to think outside the box, maybe for 5 seconds, maybe for 10 seconds, whatever. Because otherwise, people are just going to continue to be blindsided. And if you're in the government or you're in the financial media or you're on the FOMC and you're listening to this, start thinking about realigning your expectations. Stop asking what's my plan for the next 16 minutes and start thinking about what my plan is for the next 50 years. How is today's decision going to affect things 50 years from now? How much lower can rates go? How much more money can we print? What is our long-term focus? I mean, we are at a point where rates are already so low and the economy is grinding to a halt. So what's the next step going to be? It's going to be having to buy more bonds, right? It's going to be the government socializing losses. And who's going to pay for it? The guy that's saving his money at home that doesn't understand how the fucking system works. That's the guy that's going to pay for it. It's crony capitalism. And that's how he will pay for it. The purchasing power of his dollar will continue to decline. And the gap between the middle class and the wealthy will continue to expand. And nobody really notices. Because nobody's fucking talking about it on CNBC. And this guy, he can't afford cable anyways. He's at home listening to 94.1 WIP. So when I say the economy is bullshit, and it is, you got to remember that all of this stuff exists within a system that we have conceptualized and we have created. And then when our system stopped working for us, we started to game the rules and micromanage things to get the result that we wanted, which was the stock market moving higher. And if you don't know how to invest in the stock market, well, you can go fuck yourself because you're the big loser in this equation, all right? And if you're super rich and super wealthy and all your money is tied up in investments, or you run a company, or you're the chief executive officer of a company that can buy back their stock with cheap capital, then fucking yay for you, because this helps you out, right? Open your mind, folks. Just start to look at this a little bit from the outside. I'm not saying let's abolish the Fed tomorrow and go back to the gold standard as it was in 1960 today. What I'm saying is we have to fucking stop the bleeding first. Let's address the national debt, all right? Let's remind ourselves that having a recession is a normal function of a regular economy, not the fucking next coming of the plague. It's like the FOMC is looking at a recession like it's this asteroid that's going to hit the Earth and wipe out humanity as we know it. Now, things will probably be uncomfortable for a little bit during a recession, but just like 2008, we made it through it. And if we stop the fucking bleeding now, things probably would be worse than 2008, but probably not too much worse, maybe a couple orders of magnitude worse than 2008. But we have to let it happen. We have to allow for the system to adjust itself and to correct. All right? Stop worrying about whether or not you're comfortable every day. Am I comfortable? The Dow was down 300 points. I'm not comfortable. You're not comfortable? There's people in Africa that don't have water right now. Okay? And you're not comfortable because the futures are down 52 points on a Wednesday morning. Let's start thinking about this a different way. All right? Let's embrace the pain, folks. Let's embrace the pain and say, hey, we're doing this for a cause and for a reason. God, we've become such pussies, haven't we? I know there's people out there that can give me shit for using that word, and I don't mean it in a gender-specific way. That's a pejorative, blah, 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 blah. But we really have. We've just become such cowards. Get it together. All right, guys? I want a full report on my desk by tomorrow morning. But right now, I got shit to do, so I'm out.
Peace!